Hello everyone, I'm Tuğçe Erçetin. Today we are going to talk with Areti Kotsoni, who has an article titled Women's Agency in Divided Cities, Mapping Marginal Actions in Nicosia. Welcome, Areti.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us, actually. Firstly, I would like to start with your own journey for the article. So can you please share what was your motivation and objective to follow these subjects? So probably you have a story in writing this article. Can you please share this story with us?
Yeah, of course. So actually this work is part of my thesis at Harvard Graduate School of Design for my Master in Design Studies. And it started in May 2022 and was presented in December 2022. And my interest in Cyprus was triggered by many reasons, one of which was that I'm a Greek person growing up in Crete, the island very close to Cyprus. And so I was very familiar with the island of Cyprus, the politics and the conflict. But exactly because I'm Greek, I thought that I have a very specific perspective that I wanted to question and perhaps challenge through this project. So, yeah, I started this work assuming that I know nothing about the island and the geopolitical situation or architecture, and I started discovering it through this project. And another reason I started this project is because I got a scholarship from Sylvia Ioan Foundation for my studies at Harvard, and one of the requirements of this scholarship was to do a thesis on Cyprus. So since they didn't give me any specific instructions or limitations, but they just told me to write a thesis about Cyprus, I started researching the topics broadly and conducting remote fieldwork in a way before visiting in person to understand what would be an interesting topic for me to research. So as I was starting Googling things and researching and talking to people who live and work in Cyprus, by the way, I didn't know anybody and I didn't expect people to reply to my messages, so I got very lucky when they actually did, because without them I wouldn't have done this work. So I started researching, reading theses, texts, magazines, handbooks, policy memos, anything that would give me an information about Cyprus's history, the conflict, the current situation and what's going on the ground. But when I started looking at those things, I couldn't find what's actually the situation looks like on the ground. And so I started wondering what is happening in terms of how people experience the city in an everyday life and how they experience the division. So while doing this, I found that Nicosia is actually a very interesting city, first because of the Venetian fortification that is still visible on the ground, and because it's divided into almost two equal parts, and people can experience the division and the buffer zone in their everyday life. And to give some context, perhaps the audience is not familiar with the city of Nicosia. Nicosia is one of the world's last divided capitals and Europe's last divided city, both in physical and socio-political terms, and Cyprus is capital also and most urbanized city. And historically, it has been the bridge for solving the conflict, the Cyprus problem, as it is called. So the division happened in 1974, mostly because of the ethnic division between the Turkish Cypriots and the Greek Cypriots that resulted in these nationalistic sovereignty claims. And so I was interested in Nicosia because it felt to me very similar to the city I grew up in Crete, Chania. And despite being an outsider, because I haven't lived in Cyprus, I felt that I can do this work on Nicosia because I'll be able to better understand how the built environment is structured and how women experience it. As I said, I was born in and raised in Chania in Crete. In a very similar society to that of Cyprus. Chania is a place, a very beautiful place, but which is also characterized by patriarchy, homophobia and religious dogma. And like Nicosia is an amalgamation of diverse civilizations, blending Greek, Turkish, Venetians and other influences that are, their traces are still visible in the city. Chania, for example, has also Venetian walls and architectural traces very similar to that of Nicosia and from very similar historical periods. So the two cities, to my perspective, were shaped in under similar influences, and the urban landscape had many similarities. So I viewed this research as a journey of discovery, aiming at uncovering, in a way, what remains unseen by many. And I saw it as an act of activism, where my aim was to give voice and visibility to those whose stories have been marginalized or forgotten. And I thought that these voices are crucial within the context of the Cypriot problem, especially because when we talk about potential solutions, change and growth, we need to consider all these perspectives, especially since the majority of the cities, half of the population at least, in the majority of the cities are is female. Mm-hmm. So yeah, growing up in a society where the narrative surrounding the Cypriot issue was one-sided, I grew up listening that the Greek Cypriots were the good ones and the Turkish Cypriots were labeled as the enemies. And since I was a kid, I remember, and I couldn't help but question whose narratives this opinion truly represented, and whose ability to speak and heard I was listening. And I was wondering if this narrative truly represented the majority of voices, or what was the accurate reflection of the truth in that matter. So in contemplating these questions, I have hypothesized that this is the dominant narrative, and it was crafted by those in positions of authority, likely excluding the perspectives of women and marginalized communities. And so, yeah, my positionality and my identity growing up in Crete was half of my motivation, and the other half was that I have my identity as a designer and architect made me wonder, what is our position in these situations, in contested environments, and what are the designer's limitations in decision-making processes? I believe that we rarely engage with policy or actively create the conditions for these complex spaces. And this results that we often overlook important aspects of information that are crucial to understand conflicted areas like that of Nicosia. And actually, this was precisely the reason that I felt compelled to initiate a project like this and try to shed light on the ground realities. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I thought that this thesis would help me to provide designers and planners with a manual of the historical transformation as those presented in this very specific case of Nicosia, that this manual could later on be applied to different contested environments, in which I wanted to include not only the status quo historical view, but also the neglected voices, and to make this a way to look those transformation and the boredom condition from a different perspective, and that perhaps would guide future proposals for conflicted sites. And yeah, when I decided to focus on Nicosia, I tried to look deeper into the situation in the city, in the policies, the urban planning, how the division impact these policies and vice versa, and how the division affects the urban space, and most importantly, how the different social groups experience the division. So I started looking into who owns the land across the divide, and in the buffer zone, which is a no man's land, who owns the buildings, who has access to that, who has a saying at the political negotiation tables, whose voices are visible, whose voices are not, and so on. And I wondered if women experienced the city in a similar way than I experienced Chania and Crete when I was growing up, feeling hyper-visible and feeling that I'm obliged to perform in a very specific way, following the societal standards for my gender. So when I was writing this article, I was on the stage where I was making several assumptions. I haven't visited Nicosia yet. And I wanted to create this methodology and try to understand if my assumptions were correct or not. And the most significant assumption I made before visiting the site was that women suffer, in Nicosia suffer, from under-representation and oppression due to the male dominance, religious influences, and the ongoing conflict. And after this assumption, I spent almost 3.5 weeks on the site doing fieldwork. I started, let's say, proving my assumptions. I don't know. I hope this gives you a very, very brief, and it's not brief, but it's a broad overview of how it started. And this article was basically an extended outline of my work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. So actually in your article, in the text, there are a lot of inspiring statements. For instance, you ask to participants how they can define the peace, and they say that peace is the situation where there is no war. So there are a lot of statements like that. For instance, there was another statement that I found interesting. You say that women's fear of man can be expressed in a geographic logic. They learn how to avoid certain places instead of people, like that. So, and then you use both qualitative and quantitative methodology, scrutinizing everyday life, their experiences and marginal actions. So in this sense, can you please share your arguments and findings in the text, in considering the everyday life, everyday experiences like that?
Yes. So because this was a project that needed to be completed in less than half a year, I realized that I cannot, collect the quantitative data by myself. So I used the quantitative data from Maria Hadzipavlos' research, as they were presented in her book, Women and Change in Cyprus, Feminism and Gender and Conflict. This is a very comprehensive research where the researchers questioned women and surveyed women, women's opinion across the divide from all communities, not only Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots, but also Armenian, Latins, and other social groups. And basically, they ask them questions about their views and positions on the conflict and things like that. And so what I tried to do is specialize this data. This is why I needed to visit the site and observe the participants. When I say the participants, I mean people navigating their everyday lives, women mostly, and people of minoritized genders. So my qualitative methods started with archival research, but then it became ethnographic research mostly, and site and participant observation. And exactly because I needed to investigate the site and how these people move on the site and raise their voices for peace, I decided to use maps as a tool to visualize their actions and how they express their voices. And maps are, of course, used most of the times to assert power and claim territories. And as has been stated by many, they're partial and political, offering very specific perspectives, usually the dominant ones. But then there is critical cartography that deconstructs the traditional notion of a map, and it reveals that maps often serve to extend the sovereign powers over a territory and have deep connections with they can have deep connections to like marginalized voices. So I try to use maps as political tools and position myself as a cartographer. So I wanted to acknowledge my positionality in this work. As I said in the beginning, I'm an outsider, so I want to make clear that all these are not objective observations, but they are very subjective based on my interpretation of what is happening. So yeah, I tried to analyze the urban space by mapping these different, public, private, and semi-private spaces where these actions are taking place. And I used maps because when I was researching to understand the history of the conflict and the division, I realized that these were the tools that were used by the military designers and planners to explain the conflict and to explain the agency and power on the ground. In this case, I see the act of map making as a situated and experiential social practice. And in the context of Nicosia, I believe that mapping could bring attention to these silenced voices that, as I say in the paper and later on in the thesis, hold significant insights into the conflict. And I believe that maps can stimulate discussions on how the city's built environment and urbanization have contributed to the conflict and the current impact and potential future implications. You asked me about, my main argument. So, as I mentioned earlier, I started this work assuming many things, and then I tried to see whether they're valid or not. And I shaped my hypothesis by posing questions like, what manifestations do women's actions and advocacy assume within the context of the Cypriot conflict, the Cypriot conflict, and how have women's initiatives gained international attention and shed light on the conflict, which is a question I posed because I found different initiatives and grassroots initiatives when I was researching online, and then I visited Nicosia in person and I couldn't find any trace of these initiatives in the urban space. So I was wondering how it's possible to have access to these initiatives remotely and then in person on the ground to not have any clue what is happening and, you know, how are these people operating. And then other questions I ask is was in what domains do women exercise agency within Nicosia's urban environment, and in what ways have both the buffer zone and the walled city provided protection and refuge for women to navigate these complex socio-political dynamics. These were some of the questions I posed before going, and then what I did is that I basically went on the side and I tried to become an ethnographer of a sort, because 3.5 weeks are not enough, but at the same time, it was more than enough to understand how the division in Nicosia could change my route when I was, for example, walking to go from the place I was staying in the city to a cafe, for example, to meet some of the people I had to interview. So the division and the fact that I wanted to avoid male gaze and to avoid the military and to avoid uncomfortable encounters made me basically curate my whole route in the city and follow very specific paths. Which later on led me to find different traces of these multi-communal initiatives that I mentioned and that I'm mapping in this work while navigating these alternative, let's say, paths in the city. For example, I found several graffitis and several posters in the city in obscured spaces. Several QR codes that I could later scan and find that this is by a very specific anarchist group, for example, that advocates for certain things. And so this is how I spent my time there. And then I came back to Boston and I created a catalog of all these findings. And then I put them in a sequence, chronological sequence. And this is what I called mapping later on. So I had the mapping, the actual mapping of where the majority of these initiatives take space. I decided to not reveal the exact geographical information. And this is why I mostly created some maps that look like diagrams, because it's more like topological maps showing the relation between the spaces and the people, rather than topographic, showing where the spaces are situated within the city. And this was a very conscious decision. because I want to retain the anonymity of these groups. And yeah, so in the thesis, this is not just a visual artifact, but it's also a catalog of these initiatives. Yeah.
So you have a very important sentence stating, I'm directly quoting, "One should consider that this form of protection usually excludes non-white, middle-class, transgender, and undocumented citizens." So this part allowed me to consider all differences in one place, in one space, and the right to use the in an inclusionary viewpoints or approach. And today, as you know, that we are living in complex, let's say, conditions. We have different uncertainties regarding to different issues, and we are living in complex socioeconomic contexts that include various issues with respect to our identities or lifestyle or economic position. In this age, actually, maybe we can state that we are witness of different kind of crises, economically, socially, or politically, and especially marginalized group members experience challenges more. That there are a lot of reasons and background, of course. So in this sense, how is it possible to construct or build more inclusionary spaces or cities for everyone? I mean, this may be the, one of the difficult question. But also, this is the question that we need to answer before it's too late. So, I mean, in this sense, actually, I'm curious about your position. How can you, I mean, can you propose anything in regarding to today's reality?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. And I've been asking the same thing myself. Mm-hmm. I think the answer I would give is that depends on the context, because in the case of Cyprus, similarly to the case of Crete, for example, and I would say the rest of Greece as well, most of the times we don't really acknowledge, or they don't really acknowledge, the different identities, gender identities, sexual orientations, and so on. And so I would start by saying that we should first acknowledge the different identities. And then the second step would be to give them voice. In the case of Cyprus, I think I was driven to do this work and ask these questions because when I was looking to trying to understand the historical context, I couldn't see any of these diverse voices. And it was pretty clear to me. So visiting the site, I realized that indeed people my age, people in their late 20s, early 30s and so on, are still very afraid of expressing, okay, let me rephrase, people of minoritized gender in my age are still very afraid to express a certain aspect of their voices. And I understand this, especially when these people, their genders are not recognized as valid. So, yeah, it makes sense to me. I believe that civic engagement is very important when we want to, when we talk about inclusive cities and making voices visible. Yeah, we should first acknowledge the different voices, then find tools and give them space to make them visible, and then actually acknowledge these voices and use them in any decision making. So if I want to be pragmatic, I have to say that, yeah, we should start with the simplest thing, which is not that simple, which is to acknowledge these people as valid, and use their perspectives as an important contribution to how the city they live in can change and can actually be a safe place for them and for everybody.
You are right, actually, because I mean there are different phases that require decision making, actually, and how can we know needs of others, groups or different group of people without their voice, and to learn their needs, and we really need to include those voices in one space. So this is, I mean, your approach allowed me to think in this way, actually. So, dear Ereti, thanks for the conversation. I was, since the beginning I'm saying it to you, I was very lucky to read your article and listen to you. This was very interesting and inspiring. Thanks for your all contribution.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Now we are concluding our conversation, but I would like to remind that all articles and the issue have an open access. You can follow those articles through the website. Thanks for listening to our program, and we will continue with new episodes and new debates. Goodbye for everyone.